Was really statisticians working at IBM that developed the system that ultimately tallied and computed all the stats for the U.S. Census at the time using a mainframe and using punch cards. And indeed, that's a good example of statistics rising out of pure theory into practice, but in a way I think it makes the point that statistics at the time had to be something beyond just the theory. So the math didn't get the job done, it was computing that got the job done in this case. So I don't know, I think that in a way this, on the one hand, it shows how statistics could adapt and scale up and embrace and broaden its scope. It's not clear to me that this is an example of the field reorienting itself to embrace computing, because I think it was still decades before statistics, in the decades after this, I don't think statistics necessarily embraced computing as an integral part of this discipline. So is statistics something different on big data? I think so, because it requires, in the end, when the data is quantitatively large, you end up having to employ qualitatively different approaches and tools, and the data itself and the handling of the computing becomes a major part of the problem. So we can't, I don't think we can actually ignore scale as something that makes a qualitative difference in a field. Next claim. This contribution of data science to stats can't be just all this cluster computing technology, because it's just so hard to use. How can anyone be getting some real work done when these cluster computing technologies are so primitive? And this is hitting below the belt. He actually calls out Tom White, who wrote the Hadoop book, he's my colleague, and shows, look at all this code you've got to write in MapReduce to take the maximum of a set of integers. And of course, in MATLAB, that's a one-liner. I just call max on a collection. This is crazy. How can anyone think this is a step forward? And I don't know, I think this is maybe emblematic to me of maybe the mismatch between some of the statisticians and the practitioners. Because of course the example in the book was chosen just exactly to maximize the exposition of the boilerplate and minimize the content. This isn't actually a great way to take a maximum. And it maybe goes without saying that of course this is also a one-liner in modern distributed languages like Spark, Flink, etc. This does not have to be a complicated set of three classes. I think it also is revealing that this was compared to MATLAB. MATLAB is not a distributed environment. So if you want to take the maximum of a million numbers, that's fine. If you want to take the maximum of a billion numbers, that's going to be hard, although maybe possible, but got to wait for that data to come to your machine. But there's really no way you can possibly take the max of a trillion numbers. And so I'm not sure that, I think this is exactly the kind of technology people working in big data would hold up as an example of things that don't scale, things that have limitations that we don't need to have anymore. So MATLAB's great and all, but it doesn't scale up, and there are actually big data problems out there. Next claim. Well, if data science is just stats plus engineering skills, well, it's really the stats that's the important part, because computing frameworks come and go, languages come and go, the math doesn't change, the theory doesn't change, the stats is constant. So stats is really at the heart of what we call data science, and everything else is just window dressing or the framework of the day. Okay, I think that's true. Of course, we are talking about a different set of projects this year at this event than were discussed last year and the year before and so on. Things do change, they evolve quickly. Probably more than things change in statistics, that's fair. But I'm not sure it's true that that is to be ignored. That means these things aren't important. The point is these technologies are getting better faster. We're able to do not just slightly better things, but qualitatively different things with these new frameworks every year. And that does matter. So the fact that we can use more data is not just, we're not just using 10% more data, but 1,000 times more data. And that matters, sometimes more than the math or the stats itself. So to make this argument, I'd appeal to some classic papers in the field. One is the Banquo and Brill paper, from which I think this diagram is taken. This is an old paper, but their central thesis of the paper is that it turned out that fancier algorithms didn't help nearly as much as more data did. So this is a text classification task, and indeed, the biggest driver of increased accuracy was more data. So there, it seemed like the right move was to focus on, if necessary, embracing new technologies to scale up an order of magnitude, another order of magnitude, to eke out those marginal gains rather than try and find fancier math. Also, the unreasonable effectiveness of data from Peter Norvig et al. Again, the links are in the slides for later. Basically, the story of Google's experience at web scale and learning from web scale data, their conclusion is very broadly the same. More data beats better algorithms. Simple algorithms do surprisingly well at scale. So I don't know. Yes, these are the engineering is just the engineering, but somehow that can drive maybe more marginal gain in these evolving frameworks than advances in math. So interesting. I think these are legitimate criticisms, and there are maybe legitimate answers to them. But it's something we should think about as we think about what data science is and whether it's actually new or not. Now, a lot of the rest of the paper steps back, tries to narrate the history from that 50 years ago to now, and highlights some interesting key points in that history that got us to what we call data science today. And I think these are, in fact, worth reviewing. Number one, he points to the S language from Chambers et al. From 1976. S was a statistical language, and it was a way to write code that transformed data and ran analysis and output models and would let you save that data and save those programs in a file and reload them and rerun them, which sounds very elementary to us today, but actually that was maybe a somewhat new idea for statistics. Rather than write a paper, we write a program that performs our computation, and we share the program, not just the write-up. We share the data and not just the conclusions. And this was made possible by having a framework for doing this, for a common language for expressing the computations and the analysis in an organized way, expressing the results and letting that be shared around. Now, S, you may not have heard of the S language, but you've probably heard of its successor, R. R, of course, is still a very popular language and environment for statistical computing. And today we have nice IDEs, RStudio for R. This is an example of RStudio here. And this idea of integrated program data and output or visualization, maybe with comments in line, so combined documentation, code, and data, still lives on, and it's still a powerful idea today. I would say this is essentially the type of technology that begat notebooks as well. That's a powerful model that I think started with the S language, and it really represents something that started in statistics, but went somewhere else, because along its way to building towards how people practice statistics. People wanted to be able to compute statistics, papers, not just write about it. So S was the beginning, R, and the notebooks, I think, are the successors, the continuations of those ideas. Even today, we're still making notebook tools, Zeppelin, for example. Another interesting milestone or interesting point is another paper from Leo Breiman. Leo Breiman is maybe better known for writing a paper about random decision forests, but a well-known statistician, well-known thinker in the space. And this is another paper worth a skim, I think. But it makes a lot of points, but it makes one particular point that's important from its title. Leo was identified two distinct cultures he saw developing in statistics. And I think the development of those two cultures is also an interesting point of divergence in the history of statistics and its evolution into what we know today. He called them the two cultures. He called them the generative modeling culture and the predictive modeling culture. So the generative modeling culture thinks of statistics as a way to understand why some inputs lead to some outputs, to model the process that takes inputs and somehow creates the outputs, to understand what's inside this black box between inputs and outputs. Its goal is to explain. Its goal is to maybe even explain so much that you could run this machinery that generates the outputs from the inputs yourself. And it's, its focus is expedition and elaboration of why things happen, which makes a lot of sense, it really does. But it's not the only way you could look at the problem. He identified a different culture he saw emerging, which he called the predictive modeling culture, which was pretty entirely focused on prediction accuracy. Forget what's in the black box. Let's work on modeling its behavior as best we can, so that given some inputs, we can predict the outputs with high accuracy. And in the predictive modeling culture says it doesn't really matter so much what's in the model. It's just a model anyway. We can't know whether it's true or reflects the reality. We don't care. The important thing is that we can make predictions that are accurate. And at the time, Leo says at the time, he thought that the generative modeling culture in 2001 was like 98% of the field, and the predictive modeling culture was 2%. I would say that almost everything people are introduced to as data science today through Coursera, for example, is predictive modeling culture. It is treating these algorithms as black boxes and teaching you how to tune them to get the best accuracy on some held-out set. And that's no bad thing. It's actually, it's a very pragmatic view of what it means to do data science and do statistics. It's not just seeking to explain as much as build a system that can predict. So that's interesting, because again, I think that is a forking point where some lines of research went somewhere else from statistics. And I think that branch with, you know, for example, the work on things like S were the beginnings of what would lead to data science and machine learning as we know it today. A third interesting point he talks about is, well, a paper about a thing that had happened already. It's a paper about the common task method. And it's a thing I think we all recognize intuitively because we take it for granted today, but it wasn't necessarily, it hasn't been intuitive always. The paper talks about a number of things, but one of the things it tells a story about the development of language models in the 80s and 90s. And he describes the state of academic research in the field at the time as beset by glamour and deceit. He found a lot of people overly concerned with elegant models of language that somehow matched what we wish to be some sort of theoretical or epistemological understanding of why language works. People were focused on taking theoretical models from Noam Chomsky and trying to make them work in software. And it only got so far. It didn't do that well. And he said that focus on the beauty of the model first kept the field from progressing, at least, for a bit over a decade. He says progress started to be made when the problem was reframed a little bit to work more like what we would call capital today. So the paper narrates the rise of a different way of thinking about these things. Instead of focusing on theoretical beauty of the model, let's just focus on black box output. Let's focus on optimizing, taking a standard set of inputs and a standard set of outputs and challenging people in research to optimize predictive accuracy, which is more or less exactly how Kaggle works today. And it's a little bit reductionist, it's a little simplistic, it's very pragmatic, but it drove, in fact, a lot of advancement in the field. Give people a target to measure and they will optimize it. Reframing the problem as an optimization problem, challenging research to make incrementally better progress on accuracy actually did move the field forward rather than focusing on theory. And again, it's not the only way to think about what the point of data science and stats is, but we do think up quite frequently that this is how data science is meant to be. It is all about just optimizing the model to get some value. And it does have a lot of value, but it's worth remembering that it wasn't always this way. Or this is not how everyone thinks about the point of data science. Anyway, there's more to the paper. There's more data points along the way, more interesting anecdotes in these papers. They're worth skimming at the least, if not reading. But of course, he is trying to come to a conclusion about how to teach data science. Because if we can at least teach it properly, maybe we can practice it properly. Being a professor, he's mostly concerned with narrating a curriculum. So most of the second half of the paper is his picture of the perfect data science curriculum. And it makes sense, and it actually compares favorably, I think, to how you see real data science programs taught today. So on the left are the key elements of a UC Berkeley Master's in Data Science program. And on the right are the papers suggested key points in a data science program. So clearly today, as taught, we've certainly concluded that data science, whatever it is, does seem to concern storing and retrieving data. Yes, the data munging itself is a key part. There's a large component of exploration on one end, so not just applying a theoretical model, but seeing where the data takes us. There's a focus on the design of experiments and visualization and presentation on the other ends. Oh yeah, along the way, some applied machine learning. So the theory's buried in here somewhere amongst about four other things. Okay, that's reasonable. His proposal is a little bit different, although I think he also retains the focus on exploration and visualization. Has a little more focus on expands the engineering aspects to include to separate representation and transformation, munging and ETL, from computing, how we actually make these models. And he I think prefers to, yes, have modeling as an important single element. But first to also focus on the science of data science, making sure that people are doing statistically sound experiments, that they're applying modeling correctly. So a little more of a theoretical flavor here, but pretty similar. So this sounds good, and it made me think, well, what is it that I think customers that I speak to using Hadoop technologies to do data science this year, how does that match with what they seem to actually do? If you had a team of people with these skills, would that be sufficient this year to get the job done? I think in practice, my list of things people do in data science is still less theoretical and more prosaic than those lists would suggest. So here's some things people need to do in the name of data science that I speak to. Here's where people spend their time, where they struggle to find answers. And it's a little bit different. I mean, the issues that come up are ingest. Not just ingesting data, ingesting in the face of failures, doing it at scale, doing it in real time. There is a large element of real-time computation as well. So applying a model, scoring a model in real time once it's been built. Of course, building a model is almost the easy part, so I didn't put it in here. That's a problem people have slammed on repeatedly in the Hadoop ecosystem, no problem. But questions I find still unanswered that people struggle with, where do I put the model? How do I serialize it? How do I share it across frameworks? How do I version it? In this example, I'm talking about fraud detection, but how do I know this model is still accurate enough that I'm willing to push it to production? What do I do if it's, how do I know if it's not that accurate in production? How do I do it in real time? How do I do it in real time at scale, too? It's one thing to throw 1,000 computers at a batch job. It's another thing to apply the same techniques, the same computations to data in real time and respond in 100 milliseconds. Very different engineering constraints for what appears to be the same type of problem. People don't just want to learn over a subset of data, they want to learn over all data, all features, n equals all. And that's new. That's its own challenge, as we say. And I'm not sure that all the tooling we have from history has caught up to that expectation. An interesting thing I find people are also concerned with is not just building the model, but updating the model. So learning now, not just getting answers from a model now, but learning and proving the model as we speak, on the fly. And I'm not sure, I don't know if that's sufficiently addressed yet in some of the tools. And finally, how do I monitor it? How do I test it? How do I know it works? How do I productionize it? How do I make sure it scales? How do I know if my model is any good? All of these, you might say, are just software engineering concerns, and I think that's entirely true. But this is what people come asking about from their data science teams. So I think in practice, data science is still much more engineering-oriented than staffs would like to think. And that's a good and bad thing. It just means you've still got a lot of work to do to bring the tooling up to the point where it's no longer the bottleneck, where we can not struggle with a Spark job and out-of-memory errors, not struggle with a new language or why this Python job doesn't quite run on that version of CentOS. I can really focus on just the modeling, and because that's where we should be spending our time. That's figuring out what the model tells us, spending our time getting more features, making better predictions, making more models too. It should be a fairly simple thing to say, I think that data predicts that, I want to just deploy it to production now. And we're not there yet, and we should get there. That's all I have. As I said, this is a little bit of a work in progress. I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's worth looking back on the history of statistics and data science to think about what it means to do today, and also maybe think about where we need to get to. So thank you very much. I'd be happy to take, since we have some time, I'd be happy to take comments or objections, questions from the crowd. Sir?
I don't know if you have a mic.
Sorry. Oh.
This is sort of a practical question in terms of, I assume you're over a team of data scientists?
Small team.
How do you sort of forecast what skill sets you actually need other than the unicorn data scientists that don't come in? Do you look specifically for engineering headcount, knowing that we're not there yet in terms of being able to data scientists at the stack, or?
So the answer for where I work, it's a little bit funny because we do have some data of our own to process, but most of our business is helping people do data science on their data. So my goal is more to establish a couple experts that can cover a lot of tooling, a lot of ground. So yes, we tend to hire for coverage and tools and techniques that maybe none of us yet know. It's going to be a different answer for an organization that's doing the data science. I like the proposal laid out here. You probably still need some theoretical underpinnings, just as I don't think you'd turn a software engineer loose if they didn't know what a hash map was. That said, most of the day-to-day work is most certainly engineering. All in all, I think I'd rather maybe start with a Hadoop engineer and teach him or her some statistics than work the other way around. But then you kind of need both skill sets. As a finishing comment, my bright line for engineers, that maybe separates the engineer from the data scientist, is: do you know what Simpson's paradox is? If you can explain Simpson's paradox, if you've never heard of it, you're probably not yet a data scientist. If you can explain that, you probably know enough to know what you don't know when you're doing data science, and that's good.
Hi. So statisticians care a lot about causal inference. Is it that in data science? Do we just do predictions based on what we expect in the real world? Or?
This is, in a way, similar to the debate. Do we want to explain why the things happen, or do we just want to predict what's going to happen next? Certainly, in my experience, most of the problems seem to be concerned strictly with prediction. Which customers are going to churn? What predicts? Why do they churn, but more like what features feed into the churn? What product does this user want? Is this fraudulent? So, although I think once you get past being able to predict things where most of the value is, the next question is why? What can we do about it? Causal inference is, that's a couple more steps advanced. I think that most problems are more prosaic than you'd imagine, and most are answered with prediction.
Yeah, well, if you imagine genomic data, which is now big data, and we want to do causal inference to understand why this particular mutation is causing this disease. You know, we can't wait for the results to come in. Mm-hmm. At some level. We'd like to have a deeper understanding. Do you see a role for these causal inference and so on in data science, or are we not there yet?
Sure. I mean, that's a fairly specific use case, but a great one. And you're right, there are cases where we don't have a closed loop of experiment and measure, because the experiment life cycle is literally a lifetime. So those probably call for different techniques. And that's a good case where, yes, thinking hard about the math and the theory does matter. But most cases are not genomics.
I mean, would people ask you about the statistical problems, though? You have a bias here. You're an engineering company. Yeah. People come to you to talk about engineering. I probably would not talk to you about statistical questions, but one of my many statistics professors I work with, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. There's a huge bias here. I will say that... Yeah, absolutely. But
You would know if you were a statistician.
That's right. I will say that, generally speaking, if we go speak to a customer, they know their business quite well. They actually typically, if they're a data-driven business, thank you very much, they've already been doing data science for years. They have a team that understands the math and the model. They just want to maybe embrace new tooling. And indeed, that's where Hadoop and Prince come in. So you're right, that although that's typically not the bottleneck, though it's not, they don't need to learn new math. You're right, they wouldn't probably speak to a software vendor for that anyway. So agree, entirely agree.
And the other thing is, I mean, understanding what is inside the black box is when you want to influence your prediction, that's when that comes into account. And mm-hmm. sometimes you really have to do this. A lot of the time, it's enough to count the number of visitors or whatever, right? But later on, it will get interesting, I think, too.
And normally that takes the form of feature selection. So yes, now I know that this customer is going to churn, but okay, what can I do about it? What about their activities predicts that, and does that tell me about what we need to do differently for them? And that's mostly answered by feature selection, but you're right, that you can take that farther and farther and farther. Once you've got the groundwork laid, you have the data, you can at least predict with some accuracy some outcome you care about, then you can go explain why.
Thanks. Anyone else?
Interesting talk, even for us software engineers. Do you think Python and SQL are going to be all people are going to need in the future for expressing algorithms and queries?
Python and SQL will be all you need. Okay, so SQL seems like it's query language, you know, by definition. It's a data access language. Doesn't seem like a tool that was supposed to be or is necessarily good for general computation. Python's just a language. So I think we'll need more than that, even if like the way we get at data for some use case, SQL may be part of a pipeline that gets us our data. Python may be the language in which we write the computation. But those alone don't seem to get the job done. Python needs Scikit or PySpark, for example. SQL can get us our data, but yeah, health economics, deep learning, for example. So no, I think inevitably the tool landscape is going to continue to evolve and become complicated. One more?
So there are a lot of different platforms that maybe help put machine learning in production, different models in production, things like YHANA and Dunlevy Labs, and there's an Apache project, Sense.io. So I was just wondering if you can give us an overview of the landscape. What do you think a platform should be?
Yeah, there's a general overemphasis on model building as the core of the problem. It's not really, it's the core of the problem, but it's not the hard part, because there's a lot of ways to build models on let's say Hadoop as a big data technology. Unanswered to the questions of how do I update it, how do I store it, how do I deploy it, how do I score it in real time. And there's a couple projects that I think do address that. Prediction.io is one, was one, is still one, it's an Apache project. Pipeline.io, Selvin.io, I see a lot of projects now doing something in the space for different choices of technologies, different assumptions about architecture, but all roughly speaking, trying to address the entire life cycle. So clearly people have figured out there's a problem and we're starting to see solutions pop up. Some of the other ones you named, like Sense, it's not actually an Apache project, it's part of Cloudera now, but that's more of a notebook tool, which has indeed inside, like Domino Data Labs, some degree of model serving functionality. At least what Sense does is, I think, quite basic. It takes a script and makes a REST API around it. Is it good for production? Maybe not. Is it good for experiments or just prototypes? Absolutely. And it's very easy. So hopefully over time it's going to become, roughly speaking, that easy to deploy production models. I don't think we're there yet. Right now, as far as I can tell, it's still, there's 5, 10 different solutions and they're diverging. And in a couple of years, as more people have the problem, we're gonna see some convergence on a couple key solutions that seem to be work for a large class of people.
So that was a very good, very interesting talk, thank you. So I was gonna ask you a futures question, because
I realized there were sort of two ways I could ask that question. One is, what do you think is a next sort of, what would be a next sort of big hurdle to cross in the data science coming out of data science? But another way of asking that question, which is back to a previous question that was just asked, was do you think that data science could inform statistics with some new algorithm, some new set of techniques?
Okay.
So those are both sort of looking forward.
Okay. So what are some of the next obstacles to use for data science? Again, does data science inform statistics?
Yeah.
Second one first.
Yeah.
I think you've seen, well, over the last decade, a lot of research going into approximate algorithms or streaming algorithms. How do we, yes, we know how to do k-means, that's quite simple, but how do we do it when we can only look at the data once? How do we do it in a way that's, how do we count distinct elements in a way where we're willing to tolerate a small error in return for a lot of speed? And those have been driven by scale. Now, the only reason we want an accurate answer or want to do one pass over the data is because it's hugely expensive to do anything else. So yeah, I think that the influence goes that way. Next 2 years, for the Vue ecosystem, I think part of it's continuing to be more welcome to Python and R. These are the languages and environments of choice for a lot of data science today. They've been strangers to Hadoop up until a couple of years ago, and I think there's still more to do to make it more usable. Next interesting challenge for Hadoop is deep learning. It's a model that in some ways matches the Hadoop model. It's all about brute force, right? In some ways it doesn't. Specialized hardware, it's not that data parallel, and a lot of the current state of the art is research projects in Lua, or TensorFlow, which is nice, but not really related to big data technologies as we know it, or at least Apache Hadoop knows it. And we have deep learning for J, which is still kind of getting on its feet. So that's an interesting development in machine learning, if you call that statistics. It still doesn't have, I think, a great answer for what I would call the big data ecosystem. So I'd watch that. I know it's getting kind of hot in here, but one more question, and then we can go out in the chat and downstairs. Mike?
I'm always wondering, I mean, you're talking about these awesome questions like fraud detection or learning from all data, whatever all data is, and depends on the case. And if you're looking from the data science perspective, where are you going to start? So I'm wondering, does it make sense also for Cloudera and or data science people or data science teams to actually include skills like strategy, innovation, business focus? What kind of questions to ask?
Mm-hmm. So does data science include not just engineering, but business? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the Venn diagram, right? We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we have to ask the right questions to begin to get useful results out. It's not just a question of building it and doing the math correctly. My implicit assumption is most people out there who have these problems to solve understand the domain. They don't need help with the problem domain. They get the problem domain, they understand the business, they want to know how to do the build and do the math better. I think, however, we can probably make the loop tighter. I think in a lot of organizations I see, these are very different functions. IT and the analysts and the business functions are in different buildings. And that makes this a very slow iteration, if at all. If these things are converging a little bit, and statisticians are getting familiar with Hadoop, and Spark developers are figuring out Simpson's paradox, and business people have a nice notebook to look at, then at least these people are in the same room, metaphorically, maybe physically, and that iteration can happen faster, so that the business questions can drive some exploration, which can drive the business questions, like the industry. And that's great. Every time I see people talk, go faster, then everyone's happier. Thank you very much. Let's head out for some coffee.
That was the best one there.